My guest this week on Tasting Room Radio is David Hawksworth, fabulous chef and now author with his own cookbook called, strangely enough, Hawksworth, the Cookbook. David Hawksworth is a genius, but because he's a chef, it couldn't possibly be art or artistic or creative or brilliant. But what he does is take food to another level. When you dine at Hawksworth, you're dining on food you have probably never tasted before. And in terms of, say, pizza, Nightingale is far more than just a pizza joint, my friends. And the cool thing is there's a book beside me now, Hawksworth, the Cookbook, Food. We'll give you the website address at tastingroomradio.com. Have a look at it, because the credits go on forever. He's just one of the best chefs, and Hawksworth is one of the best restaurants in all of Canada. And that's what he intended to do. Here we go. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Hillside Winery. Naramata grown and raised. Unique, small lot, and terroir-driven are terms best used to describe their wines. Just a word from our friends at Hillside Winery on the Naramata Bench. Their tasting room is closed for the season. Seated sensory tastings will begin again in March 2021. HillsideWinery.ca. And from everyone at Hillside Winery, have a safe and happy 2021. I'm Terry David Mulligan. This is Tasting Room Radio, and it's Mulligan Stew, the podcast. And as I was explaining to David, the podcast is called Mulligan Stew, Music, Film, Food, and Wine. We got lots of film, lots of music, lots of wine, not so much food. I just needed a moment, and that moment showed up. He said, picking up this huge telephone directory cookbook and showing it to the camera, it is Hawksworth, the Cookbook. Chef David Hawksworth with Chef Stephanie Noel, God bless her, and Jacob Richler. Do you have a copy of the book handy? It should be on the table in front of you, of course. Your marketing people would be really pissed if...
Well, that's...
Because I'm going to ask you to...
usually goes with everything around here.
I'm going to ask you to read something.
I've got one lonely copy just kicking around here.
There you go. Thank you. Now, here's the deal. The book that you thought you were going to write and the book that was handed to you at the end, now in its complete form, different?
There's a lot in here.
I know.
And, one thing, Clinton Hussey, he did the photography
Incredible.
For the book. And he's one of the only photographers I kind of, if we're doing this kind of serious work, that I only want him to take the photographs. And so, yeah, there's a lot of recipes in here. There's just a lot, but I guess that's kind of what cookbooks are all about. But every recipe, there's a meaning behind it. And there's, when I look at all the different stuff and all the pictures and the stories and that kind of stuff. And there we go. Some spot prawns and some Dungeness crab that we did this in Indian Arm.
Yes. That's when I discovered the basket. I didn't know about the basket. I had no idea about the basket. It makes perfect sense.
And you can put a whole fish inside there too. Scars and stuff.
Sure.
Just into the meat. Lots of olive oil, salt. Great salt is always important. And then...
I will remind people that you define exactly what salt you're using.
Yeah.
And what pepper is.
Three or four different types, but like mulled and sea salt, you want to kind of finish things with. And then a kosher salt. It's got no iodine in it. So it's it has a nice clean flavor. It's not too salty.
David Hawksworth, my guest here on Tasting Room Radio. Let me get this right, because there's a couple of myths. You never went to cooking school, never went to culinary school.
No.
Okay. Would that have screwed you up, do you think?
It would have been a lot easier on everybody around me if I'd gone to school. When I got over to, by the time I got over to the UK, I knew what a potato was, and I knew how to make a tomato sauce. The one thing I took from here that I showed them, that was the one thing, was how to cook pasta for service for a big restaurant.
But there's value in that.
That was my only sort of quality, other than showing up every day to work. But yeah, that was the only one I had up my sleeve there, because they were cooking the pasta and then they would refresh it in ice water. I'm like, ugh, so.
David Hawksworth is with me on Zoom and on the audio broadcast here with Tasting Room and the podcast. You have told me in previous interviews that you've said it twice now that when you were younger, you wanted to prove, and frankly, everybody around you wanted to prove themselves by cooking fast and a lot of things. And
Yeah.
now that you're older, you've slowed down and you're sort of focusing in on specific projects and ingredients and things like that. So
Yeah.
is this book a mixture of those or just the older guy?
Well, that's a good question. No, I'd say this is pretty much the older guy, where we've kind of like worked all of the kinks out. You kind of go through that process in your 20s,
Sure.
late 20s, early 30s, where you must do everything possible
To
and put
impress, right?
that to impress. Well, also like to show to your kitchen staff that I'm able and I know how to make a souffle, I know how to do this, I can do all of these things. And you have to sort of, it's a weird, you have to prove yourself. And it's highly competitive in some kitchens. And so you end up getting falling into that situation where, you're doing everything on the menu, where if you talk to people that are coming to the restaurant, they just want to have a nice meal. And simpler is usually better. But simplicity, like João Robuchon said, was the hardest thing to do ever, right? Just being able to sort of like just be confident in something very simple but perfectly cooked. And yeah, it's very tricky.
I made a note, David, how you might have been influenced by books that you, and you talk about, actually, that's one of the great things about this book are the chapters in between certain segments where you reflect on the road traveled, your thoughts along the way, some of the mistakes, some of the victories. You picked up Raymond Blanc's recipes for Four Seasons Cassaison. And then Marco Pierre White's
White.
White Heat. At the time, you prided yourself on knowing chicken with mustard sauce and egg yolk and parma into your pasta, carbonara.
No, I had sent my resume to those two guys, and well, their books came out and they were hugely influential, I mean, I was I mean, the books that were there was a couple of French books that were good, but they were all in French. And then and Raymond Blanc came out with Le Manoir Cassaison. I was like, whoa. And at the time I was working at Le Crocodile and Il Giardino and all the great restaurants here in Vancouver. And I was looking at that food there going, holy camoli. And I wanna try that out,
Okay,
not
now,
knowing what I was getting myself into.
how cool would it be? We're here, it's right in front of us. It's a fresh new, it's got that new car smell book. Years from now, chefs will be picking up, young chefs will be picking up this book and going, holy, look at this. Wow.
Yeah, that would be nice.
Lineage, right?
yeah, I mean, that's kind of how it goes. Yeah, I hope somebody gets something out of this book and gets inspired. I mean, this one dish here, we did this at the Manoir, and
Describe
this
that dish,
one.
what it is?
So it's a mosaic of game,
Yes.
and it's so back over in the UK, we would get we would put duck in there, we would put partridge, grouse, guinea fowl, venison, all
Wow.
somewhat wild meat, and then a torchon of foie gras through the middle, and then set in a parfait of foie gras. So this dish would take you'd have to order everything, say on the Sunday. You would get there maybe Monday or Tuesday, And then you would prep everything, marinate it overnight. So on the Thursday, you'd probably make it, and then it wouldn't be ready till the following week because you'd want to let it set and get mature. And it was just stuff like that. The cooking was so different and so interesting and so technical
So that's
yeah.
exactly, and so should we maybe talk to the book lover, the people who want to jump into these recipes, because you do kind of warn them along the way. Some of these are going to be challenging, but many are going to be simple, and you'll be able to get through it, and you'll learn from it. We don't want to scare anybody away because I'm going to give you a couple of recipes that are the ones that I understood, and if I understand, they're as simple as possible.
Yeah, I mean, the watermelon cherry tomato salad and feta, with feta is it's an easy one. It's super tasty. I mean, there's lots of stuff in there. It just what I found, when I, was kind of 18, 19 and buying books and trying recipes out of there, I just had to make them a few times to sort of try and get your head around it because it is so difficult to write a recipe that everybody understands and pays attention to.
Which is the oldest one on the book, do you think, that's been with you longest? Oh, I know, I
Ooh.
know. No, let me guess. No, wait a minute.
Which one?
I saw it go by. Oh man, it's a soup. One of your soups.
Yeah, the sun-choked velouté is up there. I mean, that terrine I started doing right when I got back, and we did that out west. And I mean, it was important to put that terrine into the book because that goes back, from when I did it, it must go back another 30 years from there. So it's important to keep these things documented and then keep it alive, right? So
Okay, I know this is going to be at least a two-parter because we like talking and you're descriptive and storyteller. I'm going to ask one question to finish off this segment, and that is, this is f classic French cooking through England, through London in particular. Now on the West Coast, Vancouver, Canada, a long
what a
way
shit
from,
show.
right? For example, give me a classic French menu that had to fall to you through both places. Just one. It's a two-part question because A, what is that dish? And B, how did it change in London and how did it change in Vancouver?
So we did this a version of this crispy duck salad over at the canteen
Right.
when I was working for Marco.
Okay.
And it was watercress. All it was watercress. It was either at the canteen or I ate it at the Caprice, one or the other. And then because duck is underutilized protein here, and I mean it's quite popular now, but it was like took a little bit of time for it to really sort of like be mainstream. And so and the sauce that goes with that, there's actually ketchup in there, there's honey, there's soy sauce, sesame oil, and so we would marinate the ducks and then roast them and then take the meat off and then get it nice and crispy and then mix it into this. And then to kind of modify it to more of a West Coast thing, lots of ribbons of vegetables, right?
Okay.
So carrots, beetroot, daikon, and then like ribbons of cucumber, crispy garlic, all like lots of vegetables and watercress. That I would go and pick down on Spanish Banks. And there's a little patch down there. And hopefully nobody finds it. And yeah, so that's kind of one dish. The food was so rich and intense over in
Yes.
London
Yeah.
and in Paris. And then it kind of gets a little milder when you get over to the East Coast. It's still rich in New York. It's you know, it's getting there when it gets to Toronto. And then when by the time you come over here, there's quite an Asian influence in everything. And but then I'm trying to get
Clean.
more vegetables into stuff. So,
Clean, yeah.
because when I write a menu or cook, I'm cooking 99% of the time for women, right? Because I want to make sure they're happy, because we know how that one goes. And then you put a couple of steaks on, or you put on, you know, some a guy's dish type thing. But generally, I'm trying to cook for a lighter diet, and because I want you to feel good when you leave the restaurant. I want you to be not like, oh, I need a nap.
He's David Hawksworth. The book is out now, and it is a gem. Yes, it does look like a coffee table book, but here's the deal. Get beyond the cover. Hawksworth, the cookbook. Chef David Hawksworth is my guest. When we come back, we're going to take a quick break here. When we come back, we're going to do a couple of recipes just and comments on roasted tomato, mushroom and truffle risotto, salumi pizza, barbecued salmon collars. I love that. And then one that apparently has broken a lot of chefs, and maybe you could be that chef as well. This is Tasting Room Radio. This is Mulligan's Through the Podcast, Music, Film, Food, and Wine. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Hillside Winery. Naramata grown and raised. Unique, small lot, and terroir driven are terms best used to describe their wines. Just a word from our friends at Hillside Winery on the Naramata Bench. Their tasting room is closed for the season. Seated sensory tastings will begin again in March 2021. Hillsidewinery.ca. And from everyone at Hillside Winery, have a safe and happy 2021. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Enrico Winery, the picturesque 50-acre estate winery in the beautiful Cowichan Valley, with a microclimate that allows them to grow seven different varietals, ranging from fruity whites to full-bodied reds. Enrico Winery, just 45 minutes north of Victoria in the Cowichan Valley. And to really get connected, sign up for their newsletter. Just head for their website, EnricoWinery.com. And from everyone at Enrico Winery, have a wonderful 2021. He's David Hawksworth. He is the leader behind, of course, Hawksworth Restaurant, downtown Vancouver, a sensational building that is surrounded by sensational buildings. But the view from across the street, first of all, is the village. It's the pedestrian traffic in Vancouver, which didn't ever for the longest time have pedestrian traffic, but does, especially in front of the Vancouver Art Gallery. And so that's one of the views that you see. It's a great place, a historic building where the Rat Pack used to hang out in the downstairs bar. He has endeared himself to us. Even if you've never been into a restaurant, you know about David Hawksworth. And this cookbook is long time coming, and it is a glorious read. It was like a thriller. I'm getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning to read the damn book. Why am I up at 4 o'clock in the morning? So you came back to Vancouver to do exactly what you're doing. You wanted to learn from the best. But you didn't want to stay there. You wanted to come back to Vancouver with have a restaurant with your name on it. You found this incredible building thanks to Willie and your chance.
And Megan, his wife.
And Megan, his wife, yes, the real chef in the food.
Yeah, exactly.
And it was a room made in heaven for you. It was perfect. And you could build your own kitchen. You could create this incredible space. And then you had to create the menu. Has it changed much from opening?
Yeah, I mean, we've tried to come back. We've taken the tasting menus away right now. If you want to have a tasting menu, we can knock that out of the park for you.
Sure.
Just ask and we can do it. But we're just trying to do food right now that's a little bit more comforting, you know, some classics on there. So right now we've got a Turnadol's Rossini on there, right? So I like bringing some of the old stuff and then modernizing it and making it, you know, lighter. You know, we've, yeah, so, it, you know, this year has been a challenge among challenges. It's just, you know, can't describe it.
How long were you closed?
We kept Nightingale open. We were closed there for maybe a couple of weeks, I think, or a week. And then we started up with takeout only. And then Hawks was closed for like a couple of months. You know, it's yeah, with the hotel being closed and you know, and the all the downtown that buildings, you know, with an occupancy of 5% or something like that, 10%. It was pretty tough going. So we focused in on getting Nightingale operational up and running, and then we moved over to Hawksworth and got that going again. And so, yeah, can't really put it into words. It's just one of those, you know, I guess like every generation goes through something like this. You know, Second World War, you know, that lasted 10 years. I mean, you know, we're in turmoil over 10 months. So, you know, I can't imagine what that was like.
But
And then, you know, what, pardon me?
we're still surrounded by death,
I mean, what is shocking though, when I was reading about the Second World War, is like the total amount of people that would, you know, whatever side you were on, it was 73 million people that passed away. Just crazy and such a waste. But yeah, so I, you know, hopefully we come out of this and I we are very excited to start doing a lot of these dishes. I've, you know, for the last month I was doing every Wednesdays, and we do three dishes from the book, and I really want to get the restaurant firing on all cylinders again.
Nice,
And
nice.
you know, that's how the this is how the restaurant came to be. That's how Hawksworth was.
Tell
It
them
was
what
all
the.
over that. So basically, Willie and Megan, good friends of mine. Willie used to play hockey
Willie Mitch.
for the Canucks and won a couple of cups. And Megan's a dear friend. They just had another child, nameless, but congratulations to them. And so they were. When Willie was playing, I was teaching Megan just sort of some cooking things because, you know, she was super interested in it, and just anybody who loves to cook, I'm into it. So they wanted to make a fish soup at home because I'd done it for them before, and then I said, "Well, just come by West, come to the back alley, just come where." You know, get through all the garbage cans back there and come into the kitchen. And I'll give you the fish stock and I'll give you everything you need. And you can just go home and make it. So they couldn't get it together. They were too busy. And they said, "Well, we'll just come in and we'll bring another couple in for dinner tonight." So I looked at my watch and I thought, "Okay, I've got 30 minutes. I can bosh out this fish soup in that 30 minutes." And so there was a lull in service, and I did it, made it, and then sent it out to them. And they were they were blown away, and it was super tasty. I can confirm that. And yeah, that's and so when I went to the table, Willie was like, "Oh, you got to come and say hi to this couple." I was like, "You know, like I'm busy, I'm dealing with a dishwasher. It's not, you know, it was all grumpy, and then there's a water leak here, and there's like I didn't want anything to do with going out to the table." He finally dragged me out there, and then Bruce Landreth, who is the president of Delta Land, they purchased the Hotel Georgia, and then we're gonna build the private residences. And said, "Hey, we're looking for a partner in the restaurant." And 3 weeks later, it was all done and dusted. So it was.
And was the soup an audition?
No, I just decided to make it because
But
I
I mean,
had. To,
they were looking for someone to partner with, and there's this.
Well, it was a
Was it
hang
happen
on.
chance?
Yeah, it was, well, yes. I mean, it was they were some people in Vancouver are quite used to a circuit of, say, Il Giardino, the Crocodile, and
Yes.
Pinot's, and that's they just do those three. And so when they came to West, they were like, "Who are you? Who's this place? What's going on?" And I said, "Well, who are you?" And then you know, they've been great partners ever since, and it's been an amazing 10 years.
And timing, they had just purchased the Georgia Hotel.
Well, I mean, I would go and stand outside on that courtyard of the art gallery, and I would look into the boarded up restaurant that was there. What was it called? The
Yes.
Georgia Bar and Grill or something
Okay.
like that.
Something really, yeah, really
Yeah,
wonderful.
and so they ran into problems, union problems or something in there, and so they ended up just closing it. I was like, God, if I could just get my foot in that door, I could turn that around. And I mean, it's center ice. I mean,
Center ice.
that's
It is the literally ground zero. Fantastic.
yeah.
And the same thing with Nightingale as well, with that same book. My guest this week on Tasting Room Radio is David Hawksworth, fabulous chef and now author, with his own cookbook called, strangely enough, Hawksworth, the Cookbook. Roasted tomato soup. This I can understand. This I would gravitate to. What is different about your roasted tomato soup? You got Thai chili in there.
It's available at our at in Bell Cafes. It's available on Legends Hall.
That's where I discovered it. This is the speed round.
It's, okay, speed round. Okay, garlic, you got celery. So you've got 20 tomatoes and you've got tomato paste. And so what's key in this is that carrots are quite sweet. And you know, like fennel, all those other things. You don't want to add too much of the other ingredients if it's roasted tomato soup because it won't taste like tomatoes anymore.
Okay.
So, and then we'll add if you don't have fresh, super ripe Roma tomatoes, then go half Roma tomato and go half tinned tomatoes,
Sure.
and just try and get some nice quality, and tomato from Italy or something like that. But I mean, these, I'm salivating looking at that right now. It's
Okay.
that.
I have no history in a kitchen. I'm not allowed to go in, and I think that's going to change, frankly. Mushroom and truffle risotto. I love risotto. We're talking about comfort food here. It's true. A mushroom truffle, truffle, fresh truffle, easy to find ingredient.
So, if you want to do one truffle goes a really long, long way.
Yeah. And shave,
So,
be
and
careful with your shaving.
it could be a once a year treat,
Yeah.
but if I can just get into risotto a little bit, I've saw it here a few times, and
it's 129.
it's really important to use a great rice, right? So, a Carnaroli rice, we
Yeah.
use a specific brand, and it's called Aquarello
Okay.
rice. And it's from a biodynamic farm. It's a little out there, but each of those, and they age it in like a steel silo for a year. And each rice is individual. It's not broken. So when you get a shitty, mushy risotto, it's because all the little bits of the risotto have kind of broken off and overcooked.
Yeah.
And then a drop of lemon juice in there. Now the secret is just a bit of lightly whipped cream that you just kind of fold into it, just like one spoon, and then that will make it that much more luxurious.
Salumi pizza. I mean, Nightingale. Did it change? I mean, you knew what you were getting into with Nightingale, and you did your study, and you did. You went through weeks and weeks and weeks of getting your dough right. So, is it a different
And
pizza
then we
dough?
threw it out the window.
Yeah, that's right. Okay. Is it a every are you is
Well,
it a
we
different?
had it all sorted out. We were all ready to go. We were about 3 weeks away from opening. I was like, I don't know if our pizza's like that good, really. And it's just
Wow.
like I'm really nervous about this. So it's like, and we found a Giuseppe, who is a official Italian pizzario, and he walked into my backyard. I had this pizza oven set up in the backyard to do all the trials, and he walked in there, grabbed the dough, spun it in the air, and it was done. I was like, okay, I'm not touching pizza ever again. Up until COVID, where I worked a pizza station and actually learned to do it properly. And it is mesmerizing to watch and to just be a part of that, the whole thing. And so anyway, we modified our recipe. It morphs and modifies all the time, depending, like, what the weather's like, basically, how much water you're adding into the mix, where the flowers are from, blah blah blah. So I think we're in a very good place. I'm very happy with the pizza at Nightingale. I think those guys do a tremendous job, and I think it's the best pizza in Vancouver.
This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Enrico Winery, the picturesque 50-acre estate winery in the beautiful Cowichan Valley, with a microclimate that allows them to grow 7 different varietals, ranging from fruity whites to full-bodied reds. Enrico Winery, just 45 minutes north of Victoria in the Cowichan Valley. And to really get connected, sign up for their newsletter. Just head for their website, EnricoWinery.com. And from everyone at Enrico Winery, have a wonderful 2021. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Moon Cursor. The Moon Cursor name pays tribute to the gold smuggling history of Osoyoos. The winery's focus has always been making premium wines from old world grape varieties like Tanat, Dolcetto, and Torrija Nacional. And for all of that hard work and dedication, Moon Cursor was recognized as the number one best performing small winery at the 2019 Wine Align National Wine Awards of Canada. Not only do they have a great wine club, but also think about giving a wine club membership as a great Christmas gift. You can find all of the details at mooncursor.com. And from Beta and Crest Holly at Moon Cursor and everyone there, have an absolutely great 2021. My guest this week on Tasting Room Radio is David Hawksworth, fabulous chef and now author with his own cookbook called, strangely enough, Hawksworth, the Cookbook. Now, here's something I love to see there, barbecued salmon collars. My father always taught me never, 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 never throw away the collar on a salmon.
Yeah.
Because?
Oh, so delicious. It's just that, so anything like, you know, near the bone, on the bone is just got more fat. Fat equals flavor. And, you know, like that big meaty part of the salmon right by the head, right, where it's all...
Yeah.
You know, it's just pure loin. It's nice. It doesn't taste anywhere as good as the collar does. It is delicious stuff, and I could eat them right now. But and that and all along the belly, you know, the like when you see a bear eat a salmon.
Yeah.
What's it eating?
Belly.
Belly and the head.
Yeah.
And that's just with all that fat in there, all that flavor, right? They basically leave a lot of the other stuff. They just want the juicy bits.
Well, nothing to do with the tail.
Yeah.
barbecued salmon collar. And here's the thing, page 187, Symphony of the Sea, which I think comes from West, your days in West, because there's a line in there that says this dish broke a lot of chefs.
Yeah, it did. we did a version of that at the Manoir. I can't remember how it was Symphony of the Sea, but it was 7 different fishes with 7 different garnishes and 7 different sauces. So if you, in theory, if you're working the fish section there, you had 6 dishes that you had to look after.
Yeah.
And so, we had this one Symphony of Sea was just a fucking head fuck, right? So it's like you got one of those on and it is, you know, if you're not organized and because, you know, as soon as a chef hears that there's one of those on order, he is standing right beside you, making sure that you do everything perfectly. And he's there to tell you at every second where you fucked up. So I did a lighter version, as you can see, we got with, you know, getting to Canada, tons of vegetables, right? So with kohlrabi, fennel, beans, tomato concasse, beets, carrots, potatoes. I mean, you could go on and on and on, but what we want to do is cut them all the same. We want to blanch them, and then mix them with a nice dressing, and fresh fish and fresh vegetables, a little bit of jalapeno in there and some avocados.
Okay.
Delicious.
A real David Hawksworth, my guest here on Tasting Room Radio and Mulligan's to the podcast. It's a really big deal. Speed round. Are you still doing Nightingale to go?
Yep.
Okay. The frozen
Legends Hall, and also, you know what the COVID brought us. You know, we're like the pizza. I wanted to do a frozen pizza, and you know, I was watching some stuff on the internet, and now Stephanie is. And Salim and the Nightingale crew we've been doing frozen pizzas that are available on Legends Hall and soon to be available in Stong's and hopefully Urban Fare.
Okay.
and it's as good as being in the restaurant.
My guest this week on Tasting Room Radio is David Hawksworth, fabulous chef and now author, with his own cookbook called, strangely enough, Hawksworth, the Cookbook. I now know why I woke up at 4 o'clock this morning to reread portions of the book. It's because I could never, ever, ever do justice to this book. You have to get your hands on it for yourself. Just go into a bookstore. Just look, Hawksworth, the Cookbook, and just look at the work that went into it. Don't be intimidated by, you know, this broke a lot of chefs kind of thing, because you won't go anywhere near that recipe. But the next page will have something that will last for you the rest of your life. Now, I'm going to ask you, Chef, to go to page 157 and read the last, that's one of your brown pages, 157, and read the last paragraph for me. It starts with, I'll be blunt.
I'll be blunt. Once you achieve your goals as a chef and you get into a certain age and want a family, you start looking hard for ways not to have a corner over a hot stove when you're 60. At some point, no matter how good your paycheck, it's not enough of a reward. You need to be in the driver's seat. My dream had always been to own my own restaurant, and the time had come to make that happen.
How old are you now?
50. I'm 50. Okay. I got 2 weeks to go, and I'm 51.
You're a young man.
I know. It's like the runway's way too long. when does it end?
All right. Two things about the people around you, your peers.
Yes.
How many restaurant? Well, not so much how many we will lose, because we're going to lose a lot. How will the ones that survive for 2021 and beyond?
I mean, if you're in a pickle right now, you're going to have to cut a deal with a landlord. Hopefully your landlord is wants to work with you and wants to kind of can get past all the dollar signs and sort of, you know, make it work. That's really challenging. I know from a first-hand basis that some landlords are there to help and work with you, and some are not. You know, that's very tricky to deal with. You know, I just heard L'Abattoir's closing for a few weeks.
Sure.
And then they're going to be running 3 days a week. I mean, I refuse to go down. So I'm just going to make it happen. So, you know, we're losing big this year. But, you know, I'm keeping 150 people employed. You know, we're just going to fight our way out of this.
And this time next year, what will the restaurant business look like? How close to what we recognize will be there?
This time next year. I mean, there's definitely been a cull. It's interesting how, you know, some restaurants like out in the suburbs have gotten busier, right? And the downtown core has been decimated.
Exactly.
You know, like Joey's, you know, this month is, you wouldn't even believe how down they are from last year. It's really hard to say what it's going to look like. There was almost too many options here in Vancouver. So this is kind of, this might make it a little bit more viable for everybody.
Okay.
When we get up and running again, I don't know what it's going to look like a year from now. I really don't, you know, so.
Okay.
I know that everybody that all of my peers, I've got the same mindset. They're not going down. They're not going to hit the mat. So they'll do everything that they can. And then we'll see what's there.
Okay. It's funny. This just popped into my mind. I remember I was gobsmacked when Andre Durbach opened an Italian restaurant, Il Falcone, in Courtney Comox. Now, I've known him over the years for a dozen restaurants in Vancouver, mm-hmm. and I liked some of everything that he did. There was always something there that I really liked. And I said to him, what are you doing here? He said, my entire life I have been cooking in someone else's building. My wife and I decided, to cook for myself in my own building. And he bought an old Mexican restaurant, beautiful little Mexican restaurant with a fireplace and a stone wall around it and everything. It's gorgeous. And he had a big grin on his face. He said, I'm finally cooking for myself.
And yeah, so happy.
Happy because he's his own landlord.
Yeah.
He can pull his own chain, right?
So that's one of the secret keys to this. You know, as I was trying to figure out, you know, what this looks like, you know, how do you make it in this career? Because it's like, it's not just about like, you know, how well you can make a souffle or how well you can cook the scallops, or, you know, it's about, you know, why is that restaurant viable versus this one? And there's so many little secrets. And, you know, one of them might be is like, you know, trying to buy, like trying to, you know, go to Chilliwack, and buy your place and pay that off. And that you're going to have some really super thin days of business out there, but you're going to have busy ones too. But at the end of the day, you're paying that restaurant off and you get that dirt. Whereas, you know, in our situations where we want to be, you know, downtown, those days are long gone. So, I think Andre made the really good choice.
Yeah,
Good
the
for him.
timing was impeccable. By the way, one last comment on the cookbook. At the very back, there's no wine. You're not going to go and find wine pairings per se. I mean, they have tons of wine at Hawksworth. Tons, great wine. It's an incredible seller. But on page 300, go looking for the cocktail with mezcal in it and some chili. It's fantastic. I just hope your 2021 will ride in on the coattails of this incredible cookbook. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Always good to hear from you. Hopefully, in person next time.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Our guest has been David Hawksworth. The book is Hawksworth, The Cookbook. It's big, it's glorious. And you can guarantee yourself a lifetime of sensational food if you just keep turning the pages. All right, when we come back, the foodie chap, Liam Makelam in San Francisco. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Moon Cursor. The Moon Cursor name pays tribute to the gold smuggling history of Osoyoos. The winery's focus has always been making premium wines from old world grape varieties like Tanat, Dolcetto, and Torrija Nacional. And for all of that hard work and dedication, Moon Cursor was recognized as the number one best performing small winery at the 2019 Wine Align National Wine Awards of Canada. Not only do they have a great wine club, but also think about giving a wine club membership as a great Christmas gift. You can find all of the details at mooncursor.com. And from Beta and Crestali at Moon Cursor and everyone there, have an absolutely great 2021. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by The Hatch, who would like to announce that Black Swift Vineyards has opened The Nest. Their tasting room is open on a first-come, first-served basis, no booking required, currently accepting groups of up to 6 people in accordance with good response guidelines. They have a wonderful patio and a picnic area you can often find on site, Grumpy Chef, Little Tokyo Ramen, and their very own Smoke Show, smoked meats barbecue food truck on the site. BlackSwiftVineyards.com and TheHatchWines.com. And from all of the worker bees at The Hatch, have a safe and happy 2021. I'm Terry David Mulligan, and this is Tasting Room Radio. And we always welcome guests that we know, that we're friends of, that we just die to talk to. Liam Makelam is just such a guy, even though he completely stole the idea for his shows from this very show. And he admits it. Every time he comes on, he admits it. Am I right there, Liam? You're the same Liam Makelam, right?
Yes, you are, Terry. Terry, by the way, happy Christmas. Happy holidays. Happy Hanukkah.
Thank you.
Happy Chanukah. Happy all things.
Thank you.
And yes, Terry, TDM, you inspired Foodie Chap when you interviewed me a decade ago. And actually, I want to say happy anniversary to us, because Foodie Chap was born this month 10 years ago.
Wow.
Yes, 10 years ago.
Wonderful.
You sat on my sofa December of 2010 and pulled out your audio machine, did an interview with me. I thought, wow, what a great idea, just to be able to show up, sit down without a film crew, but just pull something out of your pocket, hit record, do a great interview, upload it to a site, share it with the world, boom. And so January 1st, we actually launched Foodie Chap. So it will be 10 years old January 1st. But a decade ago, you made it happen. You inspired me. Thank you.
He is Liam Makelam. He's the host of Foodie Chap KCBS Radio and Liam's List KPIX TV, KPIX TV, CBS 5, also in San Francisco.
That's right.
You can find Foodie Chap at kcbs.com/Foodie Chap, and he's the founder of Chef Giving 2021. www.ChefTheDish2020.com. We'll take them one at a time. I'm thrilled that you're alive and well. Are you in Lake Country currently?
I am. I am actually in Lake County, Terry. I've been sheltering in place here in Kelseyville, California, 2 hours north of the Golden Gate. And I'm sitting, literally looking out the window right now, blue skies and sunshine.
Wonderful.
A pristine, quiet, calm lake. I'm very spoiled and a very, very lucky man.
How are things back in the Castro, where your other residence is? How has COVID hit there?
The Bay Area all over has been hit hard. My neighborhood, the Castro, Noe Valley, it's devastating, Terry, because there is a stay-at-home shelter-in-place order. All the restaurants have stopped. They stopped indoor dining. They literally started it up for 2 weeks. And then restaurateurs were told you can actually expand and do outdoor dining. So literally hundreds of restaurants forked out $10,000, $15,000, $20,000, $25,000 on these little pockets that are in parking spaces outside their restaurants so they could serve people outdoors. Mm-hmm. Well, what happened? They shut down indoor dining after just 2 weeks. And 2 weeks after that, literally almost 2 weeks ago, they shut down the pockets, outdoor dining. So restaurants are left with just one way of making money, and that's food to go, take out or take away. And as you know, Terry, restaurants make all their money from the booze, from the cocktails, from the wine.
Sure.
They literally give away the food, you know, because that's just how it works. Well, without the cocktails, without the wine, just doing takeout, these restaurants aren't going to make it. So we've got to reopen, and we've got to open as soon as it's healthy to do so.
Liam?
As you know, the restaurants, yeah.
Can you order wine? When you do takeout, can you order wine with your meal?
Absolutely. Yes, you can. So okay. The good news is, good question, Terry. You can order cocktails, you can order wine, but there are a lot of people who come to the restaurants and they go big, you know, and that's where they make the massive markups for those bottles of wine that maybe cost a restaurant $20 and maybe they sell them for $80. It's a massive markup, but that's what keeps the restaurants afloat. A lot of people, they're ordering some of the cocktails to go. They're not all ordering a lot of wine to go. That's just what I've been hearing. So it's just tough, Terry. It's really, really, really hard to see these small businesses suffer so much. The people who've been making us happy through food our entire lives are now having the toughest times of their lives. And it's heartbreaking. It really is, mate.
Liam Makelam from Foodie Chap, KCBS San Francisco. How are the wineries doing? What do you hear? What's the buzz?
Well, wineries doubly devastated because they also are not allowed to have visitors right now in much of the Bay Area and in wine country. So COVID, on top of COVID this year, the fires. The fires were devastating in a number of ways. A, because they tore through much of the wine country that we love. But even those regions that didn't suffer fire damage, they suffered smoke taint on the grapes. So the harvest in much of Sonoma and much of Napa, 2020 will be looked back upon as a dud. And so here's a one bright spot is people are consuming more wine than ever. I'm guilty of it with pleasure, by the way.
Sure.
I've been drinking more wine, ordering more wine. So they're doing great in terms of people are ordering wine. The wine clubs are strong. You know, they obviously are missing out on a lot of revenue from just the drive-ups, the walk-ins, because the tasting rooms have been closed. They opened for a bit, and so that was good news. So it's a challenge, too, for the wineries. And actually, one winemaker who will remain nameless recently told me it's tough because we're almost out of wine from last year, you know. And the little that we have left, you know, we've got to save. So that's not a bad problem to have. But if this harvest is a dud, well, you know, they're going to run into a lot of problems. Fiscally, next year is going to be a tough one for the wineries.
He's Liam Makelam. He's in San Francisco. Well, he is San Francisco, but he's also north of Napa in a lake. He's walking out on that pier shortly. He is the host of Foodie Chap on KCBS San Francisco. He's the host of Liam's List on KPIX TV, CBS 5. And he's the founder of Chef Giving 2020. Is it chefs, plural? Chefsgiving 2020?
Yeah.
Yep.
It's plural. Plural. Chefsgiving.
All right. Why did you start it, and what has it become?
In 2017, there was devastation in wine country like we'd never seen before. The worst fires in California history. I saw firsthand it happening. I was actually in wine country when this all went down. I had winemaker friends who lost everything, but got on the phone with a couple of chef pals, and I said, I just feel we ought to do something. I don't know what, but you know, you chefs are always giving, which is, wait a minute, chefs, let's do a fundraiser. Let's call it Chef's Giving. My partner, Rick, in the background, went on to see if the website I was taking, it was not. So we got chefsgiving.org. In 6 weeks, of planning, from the idea, the initial germ of the idea, to the day of the fundraiser was 6 weeks. We had a restaurant week the week before. 148 restaurants around the Bay Area became part of Chef's Giving, and they donated proceeds from that week.
Liam, let me get this right. Restaurants are fighting to stay alive. Almost 150 of them are trying to help others around them.
In 2017, we did a restaurant week and a big fundraiser, and we raised just over $750,000. And that money went directly to those who were affected by the fires through two funds, Restaurants Care Fund and the Tipping Point Fire Relief Fund. So every time there's a fire in wine country, I have people blowing up my phone going, hey, Liam, are you going to do Chef's Giving again? Are you going to do another fundraiser? And I just have not had the bandwidth. This year, again, the fire is even worse than those in 2017. In terms of the fatalities, it was lower, but in terms of the actual physical damage the fires did and the ground they covered, it was greater. So some friends came to me and said, hey, how about we partner and create Chef's Giving, fire it up again, but we'll do the video production. And we decided to do a 30 chef holiday video cooking series. So that's what we've done, and we have 30 chefs. I'm going to name drop here, Terry. Jacques Pepin.
Yep.
We have Roland Pessot.
Right.
We have Chef Charlie Palmer. We have the Red Rocker, Sammy Hagar. We have Andrew Zimmern of Bizarre Foods. 30 of the world's best chefs and our friends gave their favorite recipes for the holidays. If you go to chefsgiving.org or chefsgiving2020.org, you will see that $25, a donation of $25, gives you access to the 30 chefs, 30 recipes, and 30 video cooking demos. It's a bargain. The money goes directly to two foundations, the Gary Sinise Foundation and Tiny Pine Homes. And they're rebuilding homes for those who lost theirs in these most recent fires. So it's ongoing into the new year, but now's the time. If you haven't bought the one you love a present yet, Terry, for Meg, $25 minimum donation. And yes, we take Canadian dollars as well.
Thank you.
And you will get access to this great series. So I'm asking everyone, think about that. You could donate $25, it goes to a great cause, and in return, you get 30 delicious recipes.
All right. I knew it would be a whirlwind of information, but here's the information I really, really, really need from you. Answer the question, are you well? Are you safe?
I'm well. I'm safe. I'm in a good place. It's hard to be in San Francisco, Jerry. It's the city I love so much. I know you call me the unofficial mayor, or is it the prince of San Francisco? If you call me the prince of San Francisco, it's a town that I love so much. I moved across the world to live there. I never imagined I would ever want to be anywhere else. But right now, it is a challenging place to be because we're seeing our battle scars, our war wounds in the open in ways we never did before. Because it is a small city, but a lot of people have left, and of course, a lot of people are staying at home and following the orders. So what does that mean? The only people you do see are those who are tragically homeless, or suffering from mental illness or drug addiction. And so when you drive through the streets of San Francisco, down Market Street, the main artery, and you look around and you see a city that is in decay, and you see a city that is struggling, you see a city that has had much of the joy and the life removed from it, because the joy and the life and heartbeat and pulse of the city are the restaurants and the small businesses. And with all of so many of them boarded up and temporarily closed, and many permanently closed, it's really hard to be there. And without being too emotional about it, it breaks my heart. And when I first went back a couple of months ago, after being up here in Lake County for a few months, I literally cried as I was driving through the Castro Terry, because I'd never seen the city I love so much looking so bruised and battered. And it was really hurtful to see and hard to stomach, you know, and that's just the truth of it.
But Liam, I know you yeah. well. I know that you believe in your heart of hearts that this time next year, next Christmas, you might see the spirit of and the heart of San Francisco come alive again.
Absolutely, Terry. I believe it. San Francisco, like so many other cities, but this small little city of less than a million people is incredibly resilient. They always come back. And as you know, as someone who lived in the Bay Area and called it home for a number of years, there is a pull, there is a tug back to the Golden Gate.
Oh, yeah.
Once it's got that grip on you, you can't ever, ever let it go. So I'm not giving up on the city.
Okay.
I'll always love the city.
I'm glad to hear that. And finally, in the last 90 seconds that you and I have here, what's in the fridge? What's in the cooler? What are you drinking? What are you buying and drinking and spending time with?
Well, Terry, you know what's funny is we just got a brand new fridge up here, and I feel so grown up. And I also just got a double stack wine fridge, and I've only put two of my 96 bottles in, and those two bottles are a 2019 Pinot Noir by Kutch. The winemaker is Jamie Kutch. And the wine is a party on your palate Pinot. I'm going to save them. So that's the Pinot. That's what I've been drinking. And I'm not going to tell you what's in my fridge.
Thank you so much, Liam, for doing this. He is Liam Makelam, host of Foodie Chap, KCBS Radio, Liam's List, KPIX-TV, CBS 5. You can find all the details on him at kcbs.com/foodiechap. He's the founder of chefsgiving2020.com. Go and find that out and make your donation there and get the recipes and be entertained, truly entertained, by the one and only Liam Makelam. Thank you, mate.
Thanks, Terry. And I hope we will be together in person in San Francisco one day soon. I know we will.
This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by The Hatch, who would like to announce that Black Swift Vineyards has opened The Nest. Their tasting room is open on a first-come, first-served basis, no booking required, currently accepting groups of up to 6 people in accordance with good response guidelines. They have a wonderful patio and a picnic area you can often find on site, Grumpy Chef, Little Tokyo Ramen, and their very own smoke show, smoked meats barbecue food truck on the site. BlackSwiftVineyards.com and TheHatchWines.com. And from all of the worker bees at The Hatch, have a safe and happy 2021.